To, da ti vladajo, pomeni,
da te nadzirajo,
opazujejo,
indoktrinirajo,
pridigajo,
ocenjujejo,
presojejo,
cenzurirajo
in ukazujejo ljudje,
ki nimajo za to ne pravice, ne znanja in ne vrline.
Da ti vladajo, pomeni, da si
registriran,
popisan,
obdavčen,
označen,
patentiran,
odpuščen,
preprečevan,
reformiran,
kaznovan.
Pomeni tudi, da si pod pretvezo javne koristi in splošnega interesa
dresiran,
ogoljufan,
izkoriščan,
monopoliziran,
izsiljevan,
izžeman,
varan,
okraden. Pri najmanjšem znaku odpora ali ugovoru
te zatrejo,
kaznujejo,
zaničujejo,
navigujejo,
preganjajo,
zmerjajo,
potolčejo,
razorožijo,
zadušijo,
zaprejo,
ustrelijo,
obsodijo,
preženejo,
žrtvujejo,
prodajo,
izdajo.
In da bi bila mera polna, te še smešijo, slepijo, sramotijo in onečastijo.
Črna luknja!
Zdravo, z vami je po 14 dneh spet Črna luknja, tokrat z rahlo zamudo, ker je danes pač izredni dan. Kot veste, se ob 4 začenja protest oziroma shod v podporo Radiu Študent. Mi pa bomo tudi zaradi tega na začetku današnje oddaje v eter spustili poziv naše sestrske organizacije Črne hunte na ta protest, torej na protest, na protest za avtonomijo Radija Študent. V osrednjem delu današnje oddaje se bomo pogovarjali z Ralfom, aktivistom, ki že leta preučuje razmere delavcev na Kitajskem, torej tiste delavce, ki proizvajajo tehnologijo, ki jo potem mi kupujemo in uporabljamo. V zadnjem oddaju še ena ustajniška vsebina, napovedali bomo oziroma prebrali izjavo in poziv antikapitalističnega bloka za proteste proti vladi, ki se imajo odviti v torek 29. oktobra v Mariboru in v še nekaterih drugih mestih. Začenjamo pa z novo rubriko v Črni luknji, rubriko Aktivna misel, ki smo jo napovedali že pred časom, tokrat pa res tudi prvič v etru.
Aktivna misel, aktivno telo, aktivni človek, bodočnost naša. Manifest. Manifest. Denar sveta vladar. Jaz sem pa mislil, da si človek sebi vlada živeti. Denar sveta vladar. Le kdo ga tiska, da mi ureja voljo mojo, zatira ovira, da nesvobodno živim. Denar sveta vladar. Vrednostni papir življenje mu zatira, z denarjem manipulira. Človek diktat nosi v žepu, pa se pred parlamentom sprašuje, kdo mu vlada. Mednarodni denarni sklad, finančna indoktrina, ki obladuje človeka. Tiskajo denar, z njim vse skupno dobro si lastijo. Vodo, zemljo, hrano, banke, borze, tovarne, šole, vrtce, igrišča, policije, vojsko, mediji, Radio Študent, parlament in voljo človeka. Vse, kar človek ustvari, si lastijo. Človek. Denar določa obstoj vsega, kar za življenje potrebujemo. In tako brez svoje volje smo prodani v službi, složni, sužni. Mednarodno denarno skladni. Svet se okol vrti, fašizem še živi, mi vrtimo se z njim, je kot monopoli. Na mesto svobodne volje, diktat te doleti. Važno je, kdo denar tiskati. Svobodo človeka je vzela tiskarna, banka izmišljenih vrednot. Denar sveta vladar. Jaz sem človeku naj bi svobodna volja izražala, kako živeti. Denar sveta vladar. A denarja nismo svojo voljo izvolili. Stop manifest. Stop manifestival in potem aktivna misel, aktivno telo, aktivni človek, bodočnost naša. Živijo.
Konec koncev je konec tudi konca zgodovine. Končno.
Podpora Črne hunte pri zadevanju Radija Študent za avtonomijo. Črna hunta podpira avtonomne medije, saj je širjenje vsebin na način, ki je neodvisen od finančnih in politikanskih lobijev, močno sredstvo alternativnega oziroma avtonomnega delovanja.
Kvalitetno, poglobljeno, večstransko in kritično podajanje in interpretiranje stvarnosti je nujen dejavnik, ki skupnosti in posameznikom omogoča sprejemanje tehnih stališč in s tem podporo za svoje delovanje. Zato je boj za alternativne vsebinske, tehnične in organizacijske pristope v medijih izjemno pomemben. Nihče ni popoln, vendar pa je Radio Študent eden redkih medijev v našem prostoru, ki k temu teži. Zato je njegov boj tudi boj Črne hunte in verjamemo, da je tudi boj vseh pobud in inicijativ, ki so organizirane od spodaj in katerih imaginacija sega onkraj ustaljenih forum delovanja.
Črna hunta z razočaranjem ugotavlja, da je Radio Študent edini poslušljiv radio v regiji. Zato so prizadevanja za razširitev delovanja nujna, zgolj zahteva po širjenju polja oddajanja pa ni zadostna. En takšen radijski medij je popolnoma premalo. Črna hunta zato poziva k odpiranju sesterskih radijskih podružnic povsod, kjer bo zato izkazan interes tovarišije, saj bomo le tako lahko okrepili in razširili našo medijsko skupnost.
Smo sredi obdobja, ko še nekoliko bolj občutimo zakrknjeno okolostenelost praks, ki jim jih vseljujeta kapitalizem in njihova priležnica država. Čedalje bolj očitno postaja, da so sedanje organizacijske oblike v gospodarstvu, državnih institucijah in tako imenovanem nevladnem sektorju pase, med njimi tudi ureditev na način javnih zavodov. Očitno je tudi, da takšen način organiziranja ne služi njegovim uporabnikom, ampak sistemski logiki reprodukcije in ustvarjanju nepotrebnih presežnih vrednosti, kopičenju teh v rokah elit ter brzdanju sistemskih sprememb.
V to logiko pehanja za dobičkom pa se spretno vpeljuje vse nas, le da mi namesto za dobiček tekmujemo za drobtinice. Tekmovanje, klientelizem in špekulacije so postali vsak dan civilne družbe, tudi Radio Študent, ki je nepremišljeno sprejel to igro. Ne igrajmo je, ne bodimo del te reformistične civilne družbe, ne lobirajmo, ne prilizujmo se, ampak odločno zahtevajmo in si vzamimo to, kar potrebujemo.
Radio Študent, radio skupnosti. Radio Študent ni edinstven, kakor niso edinstveni ostali žepi alternativ. Radio Študent tudi ni pomemben in subverziven sam po sebi, predstavlja le prostor, ki ga uporniške prakse lahko napolnijo. Radio Študent je le potencial, na vseh nas pa je, kako ga bomo izkoristili. Ločiti moramo med undergroundom, ki je tam zato, ker mu ni uspelo priti na MTV, in undergroundom, ki ustvarja alternativo zato, ker ima po njej potrebo in to počne odrezano od seskov mačehovskih institucij. Način produkcije je pomemben, v večini primerov bolj kot tehnični presežki, kakor je podana vsebina ponavadi pomembnejša od načina, na katerega je podana. Avtonomen način dela si lahko zagotovimo le tako, da prepoznavamo pomembnost avtonomnega načina delovanja drugih in mu dajemo prednost pred všečno embalažo, v katero so morda ti zapakirani.
Naj velja vodilo. Če se želiš prodati, zavezništva sklepaj s kapitalom. Če želiš biti trobilo, pakt skleni z državo. Če želiš zabavati in se reklamirati, pojdi v Bikofe. Če pa želiš ustvarjati alternativo, sodeluj z alternativnimi skupnostmi.
Črna hunta verjame v poslanstvo medijev, ki se deklarirajo za avtonomne in alternativne, da svoje vsebine črpajo iz progresivnih, horizontalno organiziranih ljudskih gibanj, ki so del teh gibanj in jim na tak način v vsakem trenutku omogočajo glas artikulacije. Objektivno novinarsko poročanje ne obstaja in prav je tako.
Črna hunta zagovarja organizacijo, ki temelji na njeni skupnosti, skupnosti sodelavk in sodelavcev Radija Študent. Oni so tisti, ki omogočajo obstoj radija. Zaradi njih in ne zaradi finančnih prilivov, marketinga ali publike je Radio Študent tak, kot je. Poslušljiv.
Ta skupnost bi bila sposobna delovati, torej ustvarjati radijski program tudi brez nesmiselnih zavodskih struktur, predpisanih strani države, kot skupnost avtonomnih skupin in posameznikov, ki je in bi lahko bila še bolj organsko prepletena z ostalimi tovrstnimi mrežami, ter bi s tem postala organski del širšega upora za radikalne družbene spremembe. O uporu ne bi zgolj poročala, ampak bi bila njegov sestavni del. Avtonomije ne zahtevaš, saj ti je nihče ne more dati. Lahko si jo zgolj izboriš.
Radio Študent ne damo in zasedli ga bomo, če bo potrebno. Črna hunta, anarhistična enota za radiodifuzijo na Radio Študent. 21.10.2013, antena na Ljubljanskem gradu.
The cars and the men in
Pogovarjali smo se z aktivistom Ralfom iz Nemčije. Ukvarja se z delavskimi boji na Kitajskem in s kampanjo proti Foxconnu. Aktiven je v kolektivu Gong Chao, ki je bil ustanovljen leta 2008 kot projekt, ki bi raziskoval in dokumentiral delavske boje in družbena gibanja na Kitajskem z perspektive razrednega boja, migracije in spola. V intervjuju smo ga spraševali o situaciji delavcev na Kitajskem, o kolektivu Gong Chao, o Foxconnu in podobnem.
Okay, I think we can start then. For the first question, they want to ask is just if you can introduce yourself, what you're doing and what's your goal on this activity that you have.
Yeah, I'm originally from Germany, but like about 10 years ago, I started to get interested in the social struggles in China. Before I've you know, that did similar things in other countries, and including of course also the place where I lived then. But at that point we had no idea about the social struggles in China, the inner dynamics, the actors. At the same time we understood that, you know, the manufacturing center had already moved to China, and we heard about like large struggles, large strikes, etc. So I knew I had to learn Chinese first, you know, to go there and like really talk to people, because I don't want to like sort of look at this from above. I wanted to really understand it from below, right, from the people. So I learned Chinese. I went there. I was very lucky because I met activists, people who brought me in contact with workers, and other people who had been involved in struggles. So yeah, I started translating books, other texts, interviews, doing interviews, and then publishing them in German and English. And now there are a couple of other translations, like Italian, Polish. And I'm not doing this alone, right? Like there are a couple of people, but we are a small collective. It's not like there, you could say worldwide, you know, there are not many people who made that effort and have that connection.
So you're also part of this collective Gong Chao, if I understand it right. And can you a bit like introduce us, what is this collective and what are your struggles and what are your aims?
Gong Chao, first of all, we founded that about 5-6 years ago, and as an attempt to, first it was a website, and now we are kind of like a loose network, with some like people more active than others. And you know, we live in Europe, North America and China, so you know, it's like one of these modern type collectives, and most of us speak Chinese, or you know, are from China, so we all share this idea that we don't want to do this from outside, but like really understand the inner dynamics, go there, work with people there. We set up the website first as a kind of archive or place for documenting the material, because that, you know, that's another thing, like we're not doing a blog, you know, we're not like constantly commenting whatever, it's rather finding material in China done by Chinese activists themselves and then making that available in other languages. Or like the recent project, there's a campaign around the working conditions, it's Foxconn and Apple. So you know, we use the website to spread information about this particular factory or the struggles of workers in this particular factory.
Well, so let's go to the main main question, the main theme of this interview. It's of course about China, and if you can give us like in a nutshell the worker situation in China and like their struggles and so on, like. I mean, I know it's like a really huge question to answer, but to put it in a nutshell.
But, you know, I try to. I mean, it's hard to, of course, to generalize. You know, the most well known situation is obviously in the export processing factories, and I've concentrated on that. You know, especially the situation of migrant workers, which that's a large part of the workers there. You know, first of all, they in China you have like a migration regime that puts the migrants in a position where they're actually treated as outsiders in the city. Right? They cannot permanently settle down in the city. They need a work permit, and you know, like someone from outside the European Union, in the European Union. So they kind of kept in this in between kind of position, and of course for capital in the state it's like very useful for like creating a very flexible workforce. They can hire and fire, you know, in the way they need, you know. And for the workers, it usually, I mean, they're usually young people from villages or small towns going to the big cities and the industrial zones, mostly in eastern China, and living in dormitories, where, you know, which belong to the company often. So when they lose their job, they lose their house and they have to leave. The wages are low. They are so low that they can't really, even if they would legally be able to, they can't really rent an apartment and raise a family or children in the city, right? It's like the wage is too low.
So the workers are practically like in a limbo, like in a magical circle. They can just get jobs and...
Exactly. It's like, you know, they go to the city just to work, and also they are kept in this position, so they can't really settle down. The change is slowly, right? I mean, there are a lot of people sort of illegally staying in the cities, but in general, this is the setup, right, in the industrial zones. And then, of course, there are large differences depending on the sector and the area, right?
Of course, hard to generalize.
Part of the factories work in construction sites or in service industries like restaurants. A lot of women work in domestic work or sex work, you know. So there are different groups. And then, in general, the situation on the East Coast, which was first industrialized, the wages there are a little higher, conditions better than in central China, right, where the wages are much lower.
Like the workers, the Chinese workers, are they organized in somehow, like in unions, or like they have any platforms to work on it, or like?
There's no legal base for like independent kind of workers' organizations. So there is a union, but it's, as you know from like socialist times, it's kind of a mass organization of the Communist Party, which in China is still in power. And so the union is, you know, part of management or part of the state. So it opposes strikes, it opposes all independent activity of workers or other social actors, not just workers in the factories.
So there are no independent unions or...
No, they're not independent unions, but at the same time, it's important, you know, China is one of the epicenters of like workplace struggles in the world, right? There are hundreds of thousands of strikes and other kind of like demonstrations, etc. And the workers are organized in the sense that they use their social forms of organizing in everyday life for the struggle, right? So, as I said, they live in dormitories, so that after work they meet, they talk, they discuss about the problems, and that's also the space where they kind of decide on a strike or on a demonstration.
So it's pretty much like an informal organization, like...
Yeah, it's informal, but it's, you know, some people call it spontaneous. I don't like that word, you know, because it seems that it's something that is made up in, you know, in that situation, and now we are angry, we have to do something. But that's not the case, right? There are already the experiences, people use those. They're worker activists, they're people who know exactly, okay, if we want to organize a strike, we have to do this and this. They call the media, you know, they go on the street, they you know, maybe elect some leaders who organize this whole thing. So it's not spontaneous, but you can say it's informal, because there are no official organizations, because the Communist Party is preventing that.
As you mentioned, the medias, how the medias react on the worker strikes, and also how is like the general opinion of the public in China, how they see the worker struggle?
Yeah. Well, the media is censored in China. I mean, you know, of course the official media, like newspapers or TV stations anyway, but even the internet is kind of censored. But, you know, there are like hundreds of millions of users of the internet, for instance, so it's impossible to block everything, you know. So you do find reports on struggles on the internet or films, etc., that the workers make themselves. But anyway, like in the last few years, something has changed, because the state in China has had to accept that workers, you know, engage in this kind of social activity like strikes, although they are illegal, they're all illegal, but the state had to accept that people do this. So when there is a repression and there's censorship, but it's not a, it doesn't prevent people from doing it. And also, like, if you take part in a strike, you're not arrested or anything, right? You are, you might be kicked out of the company or something, and if you're a leader, you will definitely be kicked out and maybe face some other repression, but in general, it's not some, it's not like a Latin American dictatorship where people disappear all the time and stuff like this. It's more like a kind of repressive tolerance, where the state had to accept, you know, that, that strikes happen. And the atmosphere or the, like, public attitude has changed in the last few years, especially after a big strike wave in 2010. When there was a wave of struggles in auto factories, so now it's kind of taken as a fact as well, right, in the public, and some journalists managed to write about it, or even like the media would say there's a strike and the workers demand higher wages. What they don't do, again, because the Communist Party wouldn't allow that, is to criticize the government, you know, or make the government responsible for these conditions, right? So you can talk about social issues, you can talk about low wages, you can talk about the strike, but you can't say, you know, it's because of the system, it's because of the
Communist Party. Yeah, you can't point fingers.
Yeah. So, so that's kind of a limit. And but you hear that, of course, you hear that, you know, like when you talk to people, or you know, sometimes in comments you find on the internet.
So one of the struggles that you're involved into is the Foxconn campaign, and if you also can try to explain it, how a bit about this company, or and how your struggles are. I mean, what you're doing about it, and just also like in a nutshell.
Yeah, well, you know, Foxconn is the biggest. When we look at the number of employees, is the biggest company, private company in the world, right? It has 1.5 million employees, and 1.4 are in China, and they produce, as a contract manufacturer, they produce for all big brands of consumer electronics, including Apple, which is the most prominent one, but not by far not the only one. So they directly produce all the stuff that we're using, right? And in like in 2010, there was a series of suicides of workers who, like dozens of them in Chinese factories, they climbed on the roof of factory buildings and killed themselves by jumping down. So this triggered like a discussion, not just in China, but, you know, also outside about the conditions of these workers. So people I had already been involved with in China started like a research project. They kind of that's one way how you can do it, you know, did it through universities, and they interviewed like a few thousand workers, and they wrote a book, and they started this campaign with like, you know, like putting stuff on the internet, making films, putting pressure on the companies involved. And the book they made in Chinese I really liked, because it's it included a lot of worker stories. So exactly this, you know, this way of looking at things that I mentioned earlier.
What's the name of the book, sorry?
The book that, that well, the Chinese edition of the book is called Me at Foxconn. And then, you know, about the conditions at work, but we called it, the German edition that we made, we called I Slaves. Which that term turned up in the campaign, kind of to describe the wage slavery of the internet workers, you know. And then the second title is exploitation, exploitation and struggles, or exploitation and resistance, in Chinese Foxconn factories. There will be an Italian version. There will be a Polish version of the same book next year. Unfortunately, there's no English version. But yeah, I like the book for the stories of workers where they describe, you know, conditions in factories, but also they are sort of anger, you know, their struggles. Then there are some analytical parts about what Foxconn is and how it works and stuff like that. So my part is basically taking this material, you know, and like spreading it. You know, we I wrote some articles and like shorter ones also for the book. And also I included some material on struggles in Foxconn, or situation in Foxconn factories in Eastern Europe. And also other Chinese electronic factories in Eastern Europe, namely Czech Republic and Poland, in the book.
Mm-hmm.
So, but as I said, my position is more like, you know, spreading this, starting a discussion, because also the position of foreigners within like the storgas in China is kind of limited. You know, you cannot do that much as a foreigner there and get them also. For political reasons, and also I think, you know, it's their struggle. We should support it. We should show solidarity, and we should talk about that elsewhere. But still, you know, it's their struggle. You know, of factory workers, etc.
Did you have any problems while being an activist in China?
No, but as I said, you know, it's also because I'm more documenting and mm-hmm. and you know, talking to people, networking, so this kind of stuff. Let's say, you know, in Europe, if we support workers, we would maybe write a leaflet, go outside the factory, hand it mm-hmm. out, you know,
yeah.
or call meetings, make public gatherings and stuff like that. And this, you know, all this is very difficult in China, right? Even for the Chinese comrades and activists.
Mm-hmm.
So you know, I always let them decide, you know, what we can do and what we can't do.
So the main aim of that campaign is like to raise awareness, or it goes beyond that?
Well, awareness, it goes beyond, I think. On one hand, it's about information, right? That's about like that people here who, you know, are also exploited proletarians, you know, in various life situations, see and understand the situation of workers in China, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or and not just as workers in the workplace, but also, you know, living conditions, gender relations, migration, etc. And then, you know, understand that there's a similarity, but also there are connections, right?
Mm-hmm.
Connections through the products, through the production and distribution chains, etc. And also, I try to do the other. Or we, you know, as a collective, we also do it the other way. We translate texts about struggles elsewhere in the world into
mm-hmm.
Chinese, and then or films about subtitled films, and then go to China and discuss it with people there. Right? So this is like kind of our thing, because we believe that, you know, if there's can be a like sort of a global turnover revolution, you know, change of a capitalist
mm-hmm.
system. It's through the struggles themselves, right? Through
of
the
course,
workers'
yeah.
activity itself, but it has to be a global one, you know,
mm-hmm.
like
mm-hmm.
Yeah. limited to one area at one work. So, you know, we saw that in history. So the problem we have right now is that we are too detached, right? We might have heard about something, but we don't have direct links. We don't really understand the similarities and differences. And in that way, especially when we talk about Asian, like people, workers in Asia, right? India,
mm-hmm.
Indonesia, China, these places. So I think our role is, you know, our role as a group, as a collective, is to, you know, pave the way to create
mm-hmm.
more links, you know, in this way.
The last question could be that if we can a bit do some parallel lines between European workers and Chinese workers, like if you see any similarities, or if the worker in Europe is in a better position or not, or whatever. Yeah.
Well, first of all, Europe is is divided, you know, still. I mean, you know, in East, West, North, South, so
of course,
the conditions
yeah.
differ a lot. And But again, you know, what we have in common is, of course, we live under the same capitalist system. Often it's the same companies, the same bosses.
Mm-hmm.
The governments use similar strategies. So a lot of the conditions are actually, like, also, let's say, the dynamics, the form we are, how we are oppressed and exploited is very, very similar. And I think this is also the link that we can see, right,
mm-hmm.
in terms of capitalism and patriarchy and et cetera. If we compare China, for instance, the whole of China with the whole of Eastern Europe, it's very, very similar, right? Like Eastern Europe obviously has a lower standard of living, lower wages, but so in Eastern Europe, we might start with like Macedonia with like wages of like 120, 150
yeah, yeah.
euros, working hours like 12 hours a day, etc. So conditions that we find identical in China. And then it goes up to, let's say, Czech Republic or something, where the wages are more like 500 euros for factory work. And I mean, kind of like in China, 500 euro, very few people earn this much money there, but roughly the wages there are between 150 euros and like 350 euros or so a month, right? So so it's not really so far away, you know, in yeah. these terms. And I think this is important, that we don't see these low wage conditions in special economic zones, as we see in China, as something exotic far away.
Yeah, it's very close. That's one of the problems. Yeah. Okay, thank you so much for your time.
Well, thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Da bi spremenili karkoli, moramo spremeniti vse. 29. oktobra vsi v Maribor.
29. oktobra lani se je v Mariboru odvil majhen, a odločen protest proti politiki tedanje vlade in tedanjega župana Franca Kanglerja. Splošno ogorčenje se je v nekaj tednih prelilo v številne spontane shode in druge akcije, ki so zajeli večja in manjša mesta po celotni državi. Na njih so ljudje poudarjali, da tako ne gre več naprej in da so radikalne družbene spremembe ne samo nujne, temveč tudi možne. Začetni intenzivnosti in odločnosti na vkljub so protesti, ki so končno vnesli nekaj upanja med splošno depresijo, sčasoma izgubili svoj radikalni naboj in razvodeneli v kulturno-govorniške manifestacije. Protesti so zato izgubili razsežnost avtentičnega in mnogoternega izražanja ogorčenja na eni strani ter izražanja potrebe po temeljnih družbenih spremembah na drugi.
Eno leto kasneje težave, zaradi katerih smo šli množično na ulice, ostajajo. Zahteve ljudi niso bile uresničene. Vladajoča elita, odgovorna za krizo, ki jo iz dneva v dan čedalje bolj čutimo, se ni pripravljena odreči svojim privilegijem, hkrati pa nadaljuje in poglablja politike, katere namen je nadaljne siromašenje ljudi in zniževanje že pridobljenih pravic. Tudi če ulice že dolgo več ne vrvijo od protestniških množic, razlogi za upor ostajajo isti. Jasno postaja, da ta ni zgolj pravica, temveč realna potreba, če želimo še kdaj živeti v družbi, v kateri bomo lahko zadovoljevali svoje potrebe in z optimizmom načrtovali prihodnost. Ker si tega želimo takoj, moramo poiskati nove oblike boja ter taktike vstaj prilagoditi izkušnjam iz preteklega obdobja.
Nekateri najbolj otepljivi učinki lanskih vstaj so povezani z nasilnim odgovorom vladajočega razreda na upor ljudi. Potem, ko smo bili strani policije na samih protestih pretepani, obmetavani s kemijskimi sredstvi in vodnimi curki ter preganjani strani konjenice, je represija kasneje, ko je vstajniško urenje se umirilo, udarila tiho, a toliko bolj neizprosno. Številni vstajniki smo zaradi našega političnega udejstvovanja prejeli visoke denarne kazni, bili tarče policijskega nadzora in nasilja, ter smo še naprej v najrazličnejših policijskih in sodnih postopkih. Tako kot na ulici, tudi sredi zobnikov sodne represije velja osnovno načelo. Vse vstajnike je potrebno brezpogojno zaščititi.
Zato bomo 29. oktobra na ulicah Maribora, kjer bomo zahtevali
svobodo za vstajnike. Ne pristajamo na logiko, da se ljudi, ki so se uprli, preganja in obsoja na zaporne kazni. Zahtevamo takojšen konec sodnega in policijskega preganjanja ter razveljavitev vseh kazni in plačilnih nalogov za vstajnike in vstajnice.
Razpustitev policije. Policija je v času vstaj jasno pokazala, da je orodje v rokah oblasti. Njena strukturna funkcija je, da ščiti interese in privilegije vladajočega razreda. Ne potrebujemo oboroženih nasilnežev v uniformah.
Ukinitev vseh zaporov. Družba, ki svoje probleme ne zna reševati drugače kot z zatiranjem in represijo, ni družba, v kakršni želimo živeti. Družbene težave znamo in lahko rešujemo drugače, skupaj, brez prisile in nasilja, v interesu ljudi in celotne družbe. Zapori, psihiatrične ustanove, centri za tujce in tako naprej niso nič drugega kot mehanizmi razčlovečevanja, segregacije in jemanja družbene moči.
Luksuz za vse. Postavljanje interesov kapitala in profitov pred ljudi nas je potisnilo v množično revščino. Zavračamo razredno družbo, v kateri enakost pomeni enakost v revščini. Samoorganizacija in redistribucija skupnega bogatstva zdaj.
Ukinitev kapitalizma. Konec politike zategovanja pasov, ki prinaša opustošanje na nas in dobičke za njih. Za nas ni razlike, ali nad njimi gospoduje trojka, ki šele prihaja, ali pajaci, ki so že tu. Ne pristajamo na recikliranje neoliberalnih receptov, niti na kozmetične popravke sistema, kjer ima peščica veliko, večina pa nič. Zato se borimo za temeljne družbene spremembe in gradimo alternativne strukture od spodaj.
Naša prihodnost se začenja tukaj in zdaj. Prihodnost, ki je primorana pomesti s preživetimi družbenimi razmeri, če želi sploh zaživeti. Da bi spremenili nekaj, moramo spremeniti vse.
Brez upora ni obstoja.
Ne privatizacija, kolektivizacija vsega.
Moč ljudem, ne stranka.
Antikapitalistični blok, 21. oktober 2013.
On is the rainbow! On is the revolution! On is the revolution!
What's the revolution to you?
To kill your bosses and take their money.
Revolution! Revolution! Dobro jebate, kak ti možeš u jednoj demokratskoj državi dizat narodne ustanake?